Part 2, Chapter 3, in which Harvey meets his maker. Quote, "It's all nonsense, frightful nonsense. It's myself in various forms, nothing else." Fyodor Dostoevsky, from the novel The Possessed. "Golden Kerkira of Phaeacian fame," bellowed Harvey, stepping ashore. "Home of historic hospitality, fall of Antony, flight of Cleopatra, and spark to the anger that leveled Periclean Athens. Open your arms to this traveler who comes from the most horrible of horrors." The captain charged into town with Mahogany close behind. Pushing through the tourists, they passed the restaurants and shops and homes until they reached a narrow street that climbed into the hills. They followed it to a fork in the road. To the right lay a path which had been little traveled and led to a small pasture. To the left lay a well-worn track which circled down to the dark side of town. They stood a long time at the fork, considering which course to take, until Mahogany assumed the lead and started on the road less traveled. The trail led them beyond the pasture and into a shaded clearing where a silver brook made a slender, watery sound and emptied into a grassy pool. Fatigued from their journey, they sat to rest. As they reclined, Mahogany wondered what they might have encountered along the other path. He became so absorbed in his thoughts that, amazingly, he didn't notice the goddess Artemis bathing in the pool behind him. She was equally absorbed, swimming in the water, pushing off from one side of the pond, slipping among the reeds and grasses, dipping down to the bottom, then surfacing, letting the pool's silver run off her eyelids and drip from her hair. Thinking the same thoughts as Mahogany, Harvey imagined their journey down the road not taken. It was easy to picture their feet on the rocky path, dislodging an occasional stone and watching it tumble to the streets below. And they could imagine themselves descending, turning always to the left, until they arrived at a small restaurant at the top of the town. It was 7 minutes before noon, and there was a man in front of the entrance. Harvey felt a sudden affection for the stranger, and the stranger felt the same for Harvey, and they embraced, with the warmth of two bald men who meet at a party. "My friend," said the stranger. "My friend," echoed Harvey. "You look well," said the stranger. "You look well," echoed Harvey. "I feel well," said the stranger. "I feel well," echoed Harvey. "And so you do," said the stranger. "And so you do," echoed Harvey. "What are you waiting here for?" asked Mahogany, breaking the loop of conversation. "The best gyros of my life," said the stranger. "The best gyros of my life?" echoed Harvey. "The best gyros of my life," said the stranger. "And this is where you will find them?" asked Mahogany. "This is where I have found them," said the stranger, "and where you might find them as well, if you wait until the owner opens at noon." They waited, went in to order their food, then came back outside. "Indeed," said the stranger, taking a bite of the steaming pita, "these have been the best years of my life. In 2009, I bought a place in Paleokastritsa with the money I made directing my movie, The Raven, and I have lived here ever since. It's a simple life. Rise with the sun, do some yoga, go for a swim, come to Corfu to dine. Sometimes I help a friend with a flock of goats, when I'm not working on my novel, The Adventures of Captain Harvey."
"The Adventures of Captain Harvey!" exclaimed Harvey and Mahogany in unison.
"Art thou then," spake Harvey, "that most immortal of mortals, Roland Twelves? That fountain which pours forth so rich a stream of speech? That glory and light of poets? If thou art he, thou art my master and maker, magnificent and without equal, from whom I take my style and sense."
"I am," said R.T., "though my given name is Anaximenes."
"Anaximenes," said Harvey. I'll have to remember that. While Harvey tried to commit the name to memory, Roland invited his new friends to stay at his home in Paleokastritsa, and they climbed into his jeep for the ride across the island. A small, once-famous beauty spot, whose name translates Old Castle, Paleokastritsa is a promontory on the west coast of Kerkira. Only a few cigarettes away from the capital by car, the town was on the verge of destruction by the misguided tourism of the 80s and 90s, until the massive buildup of Sidari and Cassiope at the turn of the century diverted pleasure-seekers from its shore. By the year 2013, though it would never be the sleepy fishing village it had been, its three bays had recovered much of their natural charm and splendor. Roland's villa was on a small road that led to the church at the east end of town. When they arrived, he settled his guests into their room and invited them to join him for a drink on the veranda. Mahogany convinced Harvey to go while he unpacked their things. When Mahogany opened the captain's bag, he was surprised to find it filled with books, toiletries, and women's clothes. They were Adelphine's personal effects. Mario had packed them in the hope they would be returned to Sylvia, and Mahogany trembled with excitement as he felt again the numbness of her loss. He found the robe Adelphine had worn the night of her fatal leap. It had been washed, and there was no sign of blood. He raised it to his lips and imagined he could smell her sweet fragrance lingering in its weave. A single strand of hair, long and dark, clung to the lace of the collar, and he lifted it between his thumb and forefinger, holding it up to the whitewashed walls to illuminate its blackness. Looking through the other items, he found a pencil with tooth marks at the end, a brush with more strands of hair, and several books in which Adelphine had written notes and underlined passages. As Mahogany read the notes, it seemed Adelphine was still alive, sitting next to him, teaching, explaining, relaxing in the calm of the day. In one book, The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell, Adelphine had marked, "Suffering evokes the humanity of the human heart." "For me it has only evoked doubt," thought Mahogany, "fear and self-pity." "To give yourself to some higher end," Adelphine had marked in another place, "or to another, is the ultimate trial." "And I did give myself to you, Adelphine," said Mahogany. "I was prepared to give you the rest of my life, but the gods are against me." "Think of the grass," said the book. "The grass?" said Mahogany. "Every 2 weeks a lawnmower cuts it down. Suppose it were to say, 'What's the use if they keep cutting me down?' But it doesn't. It keeps on growing. That is the energy of the center. That is the inexhaustible source. The source doesn't care what happens once it gives into being. It's the giving that counts, and that's the becoming point in life." "But how can I live without you?" said Mahogany. "I've lost a lot of friends and relatives," said the book, "and a realization has come to me that I haven't lost them at all. The moment when I was with them has an everlasting quality that is still with me. What it gave me then is still here now, and in that there is an intimation of immortality." "But why do I have to be the one to suffer?" said Mahogany. "I suggest you look around," said the book, "for someone who has not lost a treasured child or companion or relative or friend." Mahogany closed the book and looked at the name on the cover, Adelphine Sanzio. In her name she was still alive. He sat on the bed and began to write. "Adelphine, Adelphine, Adelphine, Adelphine."